This book contains up to 4 sides per cassette. Side 1, RC 48494. The Book of Lost Tales, The History of Middle-Earth, Part 2, by J.R.R. Tolkien. Edited by Christopher Tolkien. Copyright 1984 by Frank Richard Williamson and Christopher Rule Tolkien as executors of the estate of J.R.R. Tolkien. Read by John Horton. Patrick Horgan was unavailable to continue reading of this series. This book contains 385 pages on 12 sides. If you would like to skip over any remaining announcements or introductory material, place your cassette player in fast forward until a beep is heard. Stop at that point to hear the table of contents, or at the second beep to locate the beginning of the book. Library of Congress Annotation. Versions of 6 legends and myths invented by Tolkien as background for his early writing and reworked for later publications. His son has edited the manuscripts and added commentary. Sequel to The Book of Lost Tales, Part 1, RC 20827. 1984. Other books by J.R.R. Tolkien, The History of Middle-Earth 3, The Lays of Beleriand, The History of Middle-Earth 4, The Shaping of Middle-Earth, The Quenta, The Ambarkanta, and The Annals. Contents. Preface, Side 1. 1. The Tale of Tinuviel, Side 1. Notes and Commentary, Side 2. 2. Turambal and the Foaloke, Side 3. Notes and Commentary, Side 4. 3. The Fall of Gondolin, Side 5. Notes and Commentary, Side 7. 4. The Nauglafring, Side 8. Notes and Commentary, Side 9. 5. The Tale of Earendel, Side 9. 6. The History of Eriol, or Alfwina and the End of the Tales, Side 10. Alfwina of England, Side 11. Appendix, Names in the Lost Tales, Part 2, Side 12. Short Glossary of Obsolete, Archaic, and Rare Words, Side 12. Preface. This second part of The Book of Lost Tales is arranged on the same lines and with the same intentions as the first part, as described in the foreword to it, pages 10 to 11. References to the first part are given in the form 1-240, to the second as page 240. Except where a reference is made to both, for example, 1-222, 2-292. As before, I have adopted a consistent, if not necessarily correct, system of accentuation for names. And in the cases of Mim and Ninial, written thus throughout, I give N-I circumflex M and N-I acute accent N-I-E-L. The 2 pages from the original manuscripts are reproduced with the permission of the Bodleian Library, Oxford, and I wish to express my thanks to the staff of the Department of Western Manuscripts at the Bodleian for their assistance. The correspondence of the original pages to the printed text in this book is as follows. 1. The page from the manuscript of The Tale of Tinuviel. Upper part, printed text, page 24, 7 lines up, The Sorest Dread, to page 25, line 3, So Swiftly. Lower part, printed text, page 25, 11 lines up, The Harsh Voice, to page 26, line 7, But Tevildo. 2. The page from the manuscript of The Fall of Gondolin. Upper part, printed text, page 189, line 12, Now, therefore, said Guldor to line 20, if no further. Lower part, printed text, page 189, line 27, but the others, led by one Legolas Greenleaf, to page 190, line 11, leading the main company to follow he. For differences in the printed text of The Fall of Gondolin from the page reproduced, see page 201, notes 34 to 36, and page 203, Bard Uthwan. Some other small differences not referred to in the notes are also due to later changes made to the text B of the tale, see pages 146 to 7. These pages illustrate the complicated jigsaw of the manuscripts of the Lost Tales described in the foreword to Part 1, page 10. I take this opportunity to notice that it has been pointed out to me by Mr. Douglas A. Anderson that the version of the poem Why the Man in the Moon Came Down Too Soon, printed in the Book of Lost Tales 1, is not, as I supposed, that published in A Northern Venture in 1923, but contains several subsequent changes. The third volume in this history will contain the alliterative Lay of the Children of Húrin, circa 1918 to 1925, and the Lay of Lathian, 1925 to 1931, together with the commentary on a part of the latter by C.S. Lewis, and the rewriting of the poem that my father embarked on after the completion of The Lord of the Rings. 1. The Tale of Tinúviel. The Tale of Tinúviel was written in 1917, but the earliest extant text is later, being a manuscript in ink over an erased original in pencil. And in fact, my father's rewriting of this tale seems to have been one of the last completed elements in the Lost Tales, see 1, 203-4. There is also a typescript version of the Tale of Tinúviel, later than the manuscript, but belonging to the same phase of the mythology. My father had the manuscript before him and changed the text as he went along. Significant differences between the two versions of the tale are given on pages 41 and following. In the manuscript, the tale is headed Link to the Tale of Tinúviel, also the Tale of Tinúviel. The link begins with the following passage. Great was the power of Melko for ill, said Ariel, if he could indeed destroy with his cunning the happiness and glory of the gods and elves, darkening the light of their dwelling and bringing all their love to naught. This must surely be the worst deed that ever he has done. Of a truth, never has such evil again been done in Valinor, said Lindo. But Melko's hand has labored at worse things in the world, and the seeds of his evil have waxen since to a great and terrible growth. Nay, said Ariel, yet can my heart not think of other griefs, for sorrow at the destruction of those most fair trees and the darkness of the world. This passage was struck out, and is not found in the typescript text, but it reappears in almost identical form at the end of The Flight of the Noldali, 1-169. The reason for this was that my father decided that the tale of the sun and moon, rather than Tinúviel, should follow the darkening of Valinor and the flight of the Noldali, see 1-203-4. Where the complex question of the reordering of the tales at this point is discussed. The opening words of the next part of the link, now in the days soon after the telling of this tale, referred when they were written to the tale of the darkening of Valinor and the flight of the Noldali. But it is never made plain to what tale they were to refer when Tinúviel had been removed from its earlier position. The two versions of the link are at first very close. But when Ariel speaks of his own past history, they diverge. For the earlier part, I give the typescript text alone, and when they diverge, I give them both in succession. All discussion of this story of Ariel's life is postponed to chapter 6. Now in the days soon after the telling of this tale, behold, winter approached the land of tall Eressia. For now had Ariel, forgetful of his wandering mood, abode some time in old Corterion. Never in those months did he fare beyond the good tilth that lay without the grey walls of that town. But many a hall of the kindreds of the Inwir and the Teleri received him as their glad guest. And ever more skilled in the tongues of the elves did he become, and more deep in knowledge of their customs, of their tales and songs. Then was winter come sudden upon the lonely isle, and the lawns and gardens drew on a sparkling mantle of white snows. Their fountains were still, and all their bare trees silent, and the far sun glinted pale amid the mist, or splintered upon facets of long-hanging ice. Still fared Ariel not away, but watched the cold moon from the frosty skies look down upon Mar Vanua Tjallieva. And when above the roofs of the stars gleamed blue, he would listen. Yet no sound of the flutes of Timpinan heard he now, for the breath of summer is that sprite, and or ever autumn's secret presence fills the air, he takes his grey magic boat, and the swallows draw him far away. Even so, Ariel knew laughter and merriment and musics too, and song in the dwellings of Corterion. Even Ariel the wanderer, whose heart before had known no rest. Came now a grey day and a wan afternoon, but within was firelight and good warmth and dancing and merry children's noise, for Ariel was making a great play with the maids and boys in the hall of play regained. There at length, tired with their mirth, they cast themselves down upon the rugs before the hearth, and a child among them, a little maid, said, "Tell me, O Ariel, a tale." "What then shall I tell, O Vianne?" said he, and she, clambering upon his knee, said, "A tale of men and of children in the great lands, or of thy home. And didst thou have a garden there such as we, where poppies grew and pansies like those that grow in my corner by the arbor of the thrushes?" I give now the manuscript version of the remainder of the Link passage. Then Ariel told her of his home that was in an old town of men, girt with a wall, now crumbled and broken, and a river ran thereby over which a castle with a great tower hung. "A very high tower indeed," said he, "and the moon climbed high, or ever he thrust his face above it." "Was it then as high as Ingil's Tirin?" said Vianne. But Ariel said that that he could not guess, for 'twas very many years agone since he had seen that castle or its tower. "For, oh, Vianne," said he, "I lived there but a while, and not after I was grown to be a boy. My father came of a coastward folk, and the love of the sea that I had never seen was in my bones, and my father whetted my desire, for he told me tales that his father had told him before. Now my mother died in a cruel and hungry siege of that old town, and my father was slain in bitter fight about the walls. And in the end I, Ariel, escaped to the shoreland of the western sea, and mostly have lived upon the bosom of the waves or by its side since those far days." Now the children about were filled with sadness at the sorrows that fell on those dwellers in the great lands, and at the wars and death. And Vianne clung to Ariel, saying, "O Melinon, go never to a war, or hast thou ever yet?" "Aye, often enough," said Ariel, "but not to the great wars of the earthly kings and mighty nations, which are cruel and bitter. And many fair lands and lovely things, and even women and sweet maids such as thou, the Anna Melinir, are whelmed by them in ruin. Yet gallant affrays have I seen, wherein small bands of brave men do sometimes meet, and swift blows are dealt. But behold why we speak of these things, little one. Wouldst not hear rather of my first ventures on the sea?" Then was there much eagerness alight, and Ariel told them of his wanderings about the western havens, of the comrades he made and the ports he knew, of how he was wrecked upon far western islands, until at last upon one lonely one he came on an ancient sailor who gave him shelter, and over a fire within his lonely cabin told him strange tales of things beyond the western seas, of the magic isles, and that most lonely one that lay beyond. Long ago had he once sighted it shining afar off, and after had he sought it many a day in vain. "Ever after," said Ariel, "did I sail more curiously about the western isles, seeking more stories of the kind. And thus it is indeed that after many great voyages I came myself, by the blessing of the gods, to Tol Eressëa in the end. Wherefore I now sit here talking to thee, Vianne, till my words have run dry." Then, nonetheless, did a boy, Ausir, beg him to tell more of ships and the sea, but Ariel said, "Nay, still is there time ere Ilfinial ring the gong for evening meat. Come, one of you children, tell me a tale that you have heard." Then Vianne sat up and clapped her hands, saying, "I will tell you the tale of Tinnuvial." The typescript version of this passage reads as follows. Then Ariel told of his home of long ago, that was in an ancient town of men, girt with a wall now crumbled and broken, for the folk that dwelt there had long known days of rich and easy peace. A river ran thereby, o'er which a castle with a great tower hung. "There dwelt a mighty duke," said he, "and did he gaze from the topmost battlements, never might he see the bounds of his wide domain, save where far to east the blue shapes of the great mountains lay. Yet was that tower held the most lofty that stood in the lands of men. Was it as high as great Ingle's Chirin? Said Bayana. But said Ariel, a very high tower indeed was it, and the moon climbed far, or ever he thrust his face above it. Yet may I not now guess how high, O Vianne, for 'tis many years agone since last I saw that castle, or its steep tower. War fell suddenly on that town amid its slumberous peace, nor were its crumbled walls able to withstand the onslaught of the wild men from the mountains of the east. There perished my mother in that cruel and hungry siege, and my father was slain fighting bitterly about the walls in the last sack. In those far days was I not yet war-high, and a bond-slave was I made. Know then that my father was come of a coastward folk ere he wandered to that place, and the longing for the sea that I had never seen was in my bones, which often had my father whetted, telling me tales of the wide waters, and recalling lore that he had learned of his father aforetime. Small need to tell of my travail thereafter in thraldom, for in the end I brick my bonds, and got me to the shoreland of the western sea, and mostly have I lived upon the bosom of its waves, or by its side since those old days. Now hearing of the sorrows that fell upon the dwellers in the great lands, the wars and death, the children were filled with sadness, and Vianna clung to Ariel, saying, O Melinon, go thou never to a war, or hast thou ever yet? Aye, often enough, said Ariel, yet not to the great wars of the earthly kings and mighty nations, which are cruel and bitter, whelming in their ruin all the beauty both of the earth and of those fair things that men fashion with their hands in times of peace. Nay, they spare not sweet women and tender maids such as thou, Vianna Melinir. For then are men drunk with wrath and the lust of blood, and Melko fares abroad. But gallant affrays have I seen, wherein brave men did sometimes meet, and swift blows were dealt, and strength of body and of heart was proven. But behold, why speak we of these things, little one? Wouldst not hear rather of my ventures on the sea? Then was there much eagerness alight, and Ariel told them of his first wanderings about the western havens, of the comrades he made, and the ports he knew, of how he was one time wrecked upon far western islands, and there upon a lonely islet found an ancient mariner who dwelt forever solitary in a cabin on the shore that he had fashioned of the timbers of his boat. More wise was he, said Ariel, in all matters of the sea than any other I have met, and much of wizardry was there in his lore. Strange things he told me of regions far beyond the western sea, of the magic isles, and that most lonely one that lies behind. Once long ago, he said, he had sighted it glimmering afar off, and after had he sought it many a day in vain. Much lore he taught me of the hidden seas, and the dark and trackless waters, and without this never had I found this sweetest land, or this dear town, or the cottage of lost play. Yet it was not without long and grievous search thereafter, and many a weary voyage that I came myself by the blessing of the gods to tall Aresia at the last. Wherefore I now sit here talking to thee, Vianna, till my words have run dry. Then nevertheless did a boy, Ausir, beg him to tell more of ships and the sea, saying, For knowest thou not, O Ariel, that that ancient mariner beside the lonely sea was none other than Ormo's self, who appeareth not seldom thus to those voyagers whom he loves. Yet he who has spoken with Ulmo must have many a tale to tell that will not be stale in the ears even of those that dwell here in Corterium. But Ariel at that time believed not that saying of Ausir's, and said, Nay, pay me your debt, ere Ilfrin ring the gong for evening meat. Come, one of you shall tell me a tale that you have heard. Then did Vianna sit up and clap her hands, crying, I will tell thee the tale of Tinnuviel. The tale of Tinnuviel. I give now the text of the tale of Tinnuviel as it appears in the manuscript. The link is not, in fact, distinguished or separated in any way from the tale proper, and Vianna makes no formal opening to it. Who was then Tinnuviel? Said Ariel. Know you not? Said Ausir. Tinnuviel was the daughter of Tinwe Linto. Tinwellant, said Vianna, but said the other, "'Tis all one, but the elves of this house who love the tale do say Tinwe Linto, Though Vaira hath said that Tinwe alone is his right name ere he wandered in the woods.
Hush thee, Ausir, said Vaiana, for it is my tale, and I will tell it to Ariel. Did I not see Gwendoline and Tinuviel once with my own eyes when journeying by the way of dreams in long past days?
Note 1. For earlier references to Olore Malle, the way of dreams, see 1.18.27, 2.11, 2.25. End of note.
What was Queen Gwendolen like, for so do the elves call her, O Vaiana, if thou sawest her, said Ausir.
Note 2. The distinction made here between the elves who call the queen Gwendolen, and by implication the gnomes who call her Gwendoline, is even more explicit in the typescript version, page 42. 'Tis a tale of the gnomes, wherefore I beg that thou fill not Ariel's ears with thy elfin names. And page 45, the prince of cats, whom the gnomes have called Tiberth Brython Miaugion, but the elves Tevildo, see 1:50-51. End of note.
Slender and very dark of hair, said Vaiana, and her skin was white and pale, but her eyes shone and seemed deep, and she was clad in filmy garments, most lovely, yet of black, jet-spangled and girt with silver. If ever she sang, or if she danced, dreams and slumbers passed over your head and made it heavy. Indeed, she was a sprite that escaped from Lorien's gardens before even Kor was built. And she wandered in the wooded places of the world, and nightingales went with her and often sang about her. It was the song of these birds that smote the ears of Tinwelint, leader of that tribe of the Eldar, that after were the Solosimpi, the pipers of the shore. As he fared with his companions behind the horse of Orometh from Palisor, Ilúvatar had set a seed of music in the hearts of all that kindred, or so Vaira saith, and she is of them, and it blossomed after very wondrously, but now the song of Gwendoline's nightingales was the most beautiful music that Tinwelint had ever heard, and he strayed aside for a moment as he thought from the host, seeking in the dark trees whence it might come. And it is said that it was not a moment he hearkened, but many years. And vainly his people sought him, until at length they followed Orome, and were borne upon tall Eresia far away, and he saw them never again. Yet after a while, as it seemed to him, he came upon Gwendoline, lying in a bed of leaves, gazing at the stars above her, and hearkening also to her birds. Now Tinwelint, stepping softly, stooped and looked upon her, thinking, lo, here is a fairer being even than the most beautiful of my own folk. For indeed Gwendoline was not elf or woman, but of the children of the god. And bending further to touch a tress of her hair, he snapped a twig with his foot. Then Gwendoline was up and away, laughing softly, sometimes singing distantly, or dancing ever just before him, till a swoon of fragrant slumbers fell upon him, and he fell face downward neath the trees, and slept a very great while. Now when he awoke, he thought no more of his people, and indeed it had been vain for long now had those reached Valinor, but desired only to see the Twilight Lady. But she was not far, for she had remained nigh at hand and watched over him. More of their story I know not, O Ariel, save that in the end she became his wife. For Tinwelint and Gwendoline very long indeed were king and queen of the lost elves of Artanor, or the land beyond. Or so it is said here. Long, long after, as thou knowest, Melko brake again into the world from Valinor, and all the Eldar, both those who remained in the dark, or had been lost upon the march from Palisor, and those Noldali too, who fared back into the world after him seeking their stolen treasury, fell beneath his power as thralls. Yet it is told that many there were who escaped and wandered in the woods and empty places, and of these many a wild and woodland clan rallied beneath King Tinwelint. Of those, the most were Ilkorindi, which is to say Eldar that never had beheld Valinor or the Two Trees, or dwelt in Kor. And eerie they were, and strange beings, knowing little of light or loveliness or of musics, save it be dark songs and chantings of a rugged wonder that faded in the wooded places or echoed in deep caves. Different indeed did they become when the sun arose, and indeed before that already were their numbers mingled with the many wandering gnomes, and wayward sprites too there were of Lorien's host that dwelt in the courts of Tinwellint, being followers of Gwendolyn, and these were not of the kindreds of the Eldalie. Now in the days of sunlight and moonsheen still dwelt Tinwellint in Arthanor, and nor he nor the most of his folk went to the battle of unnumbered tears, though that story toucheth not this tale. Yet was his lordship greatly increased after that unhappy field by fugitives that fled to his protection. Hidden was his dwelling from the vision and knowledge of Melko by the magics of Gwendolyn the Fay, and she wove spells about the paths thereto that none but the Eldar might tread them easily, and so was the king secured from all dangers save it be treachery alone. Now his halls were builded in a deep cavern of great size, and they were nonetheless a kingly and a fair abode. This cavern was in the heart of the mighty forest of Arthanor, that is the mightiest of forests, and a stream ran before its doors. But none could enter that portal save across the stream, and a bridge spanned it narrow and well guarded. Those places were not ill, albeit the Iron Mountains were not utterly distant beyond whom lay Hiselome, where dwelt men, and thrall Noldeli labored, and few free Eldar went. Lo, now I will tell you of things that happened in the halls of Tinwellint, after the arising of the sun, indeed but long ere the unforgotten battle of unnumbered tears. And Melko had not completed his designs, nor had he unveiled his full might and cruelty. Two children had Tinwellint then, Dairon and Tinuviel. And Tinuviel was a maiden, and the most beautiful of all the maidens of the Hidden Elves. And indeed few have been so fair, for her mother was a fay, a daughter of the gods. But Dairon was then a boy strong and merry, and above all things he delighted to play upon a pipe of reeds or other woodland instruments, and he is named now among the three most magic players of the elves, and the others are Tinfang Warble and Ivare, who plays beside the sea. But Tinuviel's joy was rather in the dance, and no names are set with hers for the beauty and subtlety of her twinkling feet. Now it was the delight of Dairon and Tinuviel to fare away from the cavernous palace of Tinwellint, their father, and together spend long times amid the trees. Fair often would Dairon sit upon a tussock or a tree root and make music, while Tinuviel danced thereto, and when she danced to the playing of Dairon, more lissom was she than Gwendolyn, more magical than Tinfang Warble neath the moon, nor may any see such lilting, save be it only in the rose gardens of Valinor, where Nessa dances on the lawns of never-fading green. Even at night, when the moon shone pale, still would they play and dance, and they were not afraid, as I should be, for the rule of Tinwellint and of Gwendolyn held evil from the woods, and Melko troubled them not as yet, and men were hemmed beyond the hills. Now the place that they loved the most was a shady spot, and elms grew there, and beech too, but these were not very tall, and some chestnut trees there were with white flowers, but the ground was moist, and a great misty growth of hemlocks rose beneath the trees. On a time of June they were playing there, and the white umbels of the hemlocks were like a cloud about the boles of the trees, and there Tinuviel danced until the evening faded late, and there were many white moths abroad. Tinuviel, being a fairy, minded them not as many of the children of men do, although she loved not beetles, and spiders will none of the Eldar touch because of Ungueliante. But now the white moths flittered about her head, and Dairon trilled an eerie tune, and suddenly that strange thing befell. Never have I heard how Beren came thither over the hills, yet was he braver than most, as thou shalt hear. And was the love of wandering maybe alone that had sped him through the terrors of the Iron Mountains until he reached the lands beyond. Now Beren was a gnome, son of Egnor the Forester, who hunted in the darker places in the north of Hiselome. Note 3. The manuscript as originally written read,
Now Beren was a gnome, son of a thrall of Melko's, some have said, that labored in the darker places. See note 4. End of note. Dread and suspicion was between the Eldar and those of their kindred that had tasted the slavery of Melko. And in this did the evil deeds of the gnomes at the Haven of the Swans revenge itself. Now the lies of Melko ran among Beren's folk so that they believed evil things of the secret elves. Yet now did he see Tenuvial dancing in the twilight, and Tenuvial was in a silver-pearly dress, and her bare white feet were twinkling among the hemlock stems. Then Beren cared not whether she were Vala or elf or child of men, and crept near to see. And he leant against a young elm that grew upon a mound so that he might look down into the little glade where she was dancing, for the enchantment made him faint. So slender was she and so fair, that at length he stood heedlessly in the open, the better to gaze upon her. And at that moment the full moon came brightly through the boughs, and Dairon caught sight of Beren's face. Straightway did he perceive that he was none of their folk, and all the elves of the woodland thought of the gnomes of Dor Lomín as treacherous creatures, cruel and faithless, wherefore Dairon dropped his instrument, and crying, "Flee, flee, O Tenuvial, an enemy walks this wood," he was gone swiftly through the trees. Then Tenuvial, in her amaze, followed not straightway, for she understood not his words at once, and knowing she could not run or leap so hardily as her brother, she slipped suddenly down among the white hemlocks, and hid herself beneath a very tall flower with many spreading leaves. And here she looked in her white raiment like a scatter of moonlight shimmering through the leaves upon the floor. Then Beren was sad, for he was lonely and was grieved at their fright. And he looked for Tenuvial everywhere about, thinking her not fled. Thus suddenly did he lay his hand upon her slender arm beneath the leaves, and with a cry she started away from him and flitted as fast as she could in the wan light in and about the tree trunks and the hemlock stalks. The tender touch of her arm made Beren yet more eager than before to find her, and he followed swiftly, and yet not swiftly enough, for in the end she escaped him and reached the dwellings of her father in fear. Nor did she dance alone in the woods for many a day after. This was a great sorrow to Beren, who would not leave those places, hoping to see that fair elfin maiden dance yet again. And he wandered in the wood, growing wild and lonely for many a day, and searching for Tenuvial. By dawn and dusk he sought her, but ever more hopefully when the moon shone bright. At last one night he caught a sparkle afar off, and lo, there she was, dancing alone on a little treeless knoll, and Dairon was not there. Often and often she came thereafter, and danced and sang to herself, and sometimes Dairon would be nigh, and then Beren watched from the wood's edge afar, and sometimes he was away, and Beren crept then closer. Indeed, for long Tenuvial knew of his coming, and feigned otherwise. And for long her fear had departed by reason of the wistful hunger of his face lit by the moonlight. And she saw that he was kind and in love with her beautiful dancing. Then Beren took to following Tenuvial secretly through the woods, even to the entrance of the cave and the bridge's head. And when she was gone in, he would cry across the stream, softly saying, "Tenuvial," for he had caught the name from Dairon's lips. And although he knew it not, Tenuvial often hearkened from within the shadows of the cavernous doors, and laughed softly, or smiled. At length one day, as she danced alone, he stepped out more boldly, and said to her, "Tenuvial, teach me to dance." "Who art thou?" said she. "Beren, I am from across the bitter hills." "Then if thou wouldst dance, follow me," said the maiden. And she danced before Beren away and away into the woods, nimbly and yet not so fast that he could not follow. And ever and anon she would look back and laugh at him, stumbling after, saying, "Dance, Beren, dance, as they dance beyond the bitter hills." In this way they came by winding paths to the abode of Tinwellint, and Tenuvial beckoned Beren beyond the stream. And he followed her, wondering, down into the cave and the deep halls of her home. When, however, Beren found himself before the king, he was abashed, and of the stateliness of Queen Gwendolyn he was in great awe. And behold, when the king said, "Who art thou that stumbleth into my halls unbidden?" he had naught to say. Tinuvial answered therefore for him, saying, "This, my father, is Beren, a wanderer from beyond the hills, and he would learn to dance as the elves of Artanor can dance." And she laughed, but the king frowned when he heard whence Beren came, and he said, "Put away thy light words, my child, and say, has this wild elf of the shadows sought to do thee any harm?"
"Nay, father," said she, "and I think there is not evil in his heart at all. And be thou not harsh with him, unless thou desirest to see thy daughter Tinuvial weep, for more wonder has he at my dancing than any that I have known."
Therefore said Tinwelland now, "O barren son of the Noldorlee, what dost thou desire of the elves of the wood ere thou returnest whence thou camest?" So great was the amazed joy of Beren's heart when Tinuvial spake thus for him to her father, that his courage rose within him, and his adventurous spirit that had brought him out of Hisalome and over the mountains of iron awoke again. And looking boldly upon Tinwelin, he said, "Why, O king, I desire thy daughter Tinuvial, for she is the fairest and most sweet of all maidens I have seen or dreamed of." Then was there a silence in the hall, save that Dairon laughed, and all who heard were astounded. But Tinuvial cast down her eyes, and the king, glancing at the wild and rugged aspect of Beren, burst also into laughter, whereat Beren flushed for shame, and Tinuvial's heart was sore for him.
"Why, wed my Tinuvial, fairest of the maidens of the world, and become a prince of the woodland elves. 'Tis but a little boon for a stranger to ask," quoth Tinwelin. "Haply I may with right ask somewhat in return. Nothing great shall it be, a token only of thy esteem. Bring me a Silmaril from the crown of Melko, and that day Tinuvial weds thee, and she will."
Then all in that place knew that the king treated the matter as an uncouth jest, having pity on the gnome, and they smiled, for the fame of the Silmarils of Feanor was now great throughout the world, and the Noldorlee had told tales of them, and many that had escaped from Angamondi had seen them now blazing lustrous in the iron crown of Melko. Never did this crown leave his head, and he treasured those jewels as his eyes, and no one in the world, or fay, or elf, or man, could hope ever to set finger even on them and live. This indeed did Beren know, and he guessed the meaning of their mocking smiles, and aflame with anger he cried, "Nay, but 'tis too small a gift to the father of so sweet a bride. Strange nonetheless seem to me the customs of the woodland elves, like to the rude laws of the folk of men, that thou shouldst name the gift unoffered. Yet no, I, Beren, a huntsman of the Noldorlee, will fulfill thy small desire." And with that he burst from the hall, while all stood astonished. But Tinuvial wept suddenly. Note 4. The manuscript, as originally written, read, "I, Beren of the Noldorlee, son of Egnor the Huntsman." See note 3. End of note. "'Twas ill done, O my father," she cried, "to send one to his death with thy sorry jesting. For now methinks he will attempt the deed, being maddened by thy scorn, and Melko will slay him, and none will look ever again with such love upon my dancing." Then said the king, "'Twill not be the first of gnomes that Melko has slain, and for less reason. It is well for him that he lies not bound here in grievous spells for his trespass in my halls and for his insolent speech." Yet Gwendolyn said naught, neither did she chide Tinuvial or question her sudden weeping for this unknown wanderer. Beren, however, going from before the face of Tinwelin, was carried by his wrath far through the woods, until he drew nigh to the lower hills and treeless lands that warned of the approach of the bleak iron mountains. Only then did he feel his weariness and stay his march, and thereafter did his greater travails begin. Nights of deep despondency were his, and he saw no hope whatever in his quest. And indeed there was little, and soon, as he followed the iron mountains till he drew nigh to the terrible regions of Melko's abode, the greatest fears assailed him. Many poisonous snakes were in those places, and wolves roamed about, and more fearsome still were the wandering bands of the goblins and the orcs. Foul broodlings of Melko, who fared abroad doing his evil work, snaring and capturing beasts, and men and elves, and dragging them to their lord.
Many times was Beren near to capture by the orcs, and once he escaped the jaws of a great wolf, only after a combat wherein he was armed but with an ashen club. And other perils and adventures did he know each day of his wandering to Angamondi. Hunger and thirst, too, tortured him often, and often he would have turned back had not that been well nigh as perilous as going on. But the voice of Tinuvial, pleading with Tinwellant, echoed in his heart. And at night-time it seemed to him that his heart heard her sometimes weeping softly for him far away in the woodlands of her home. And this was indeed true. One day he was driven by great hunger to search amid a deserted camping of some orcs for scraps of food. But some of these returned unawares and took him prisoner. And they tormented him but did not slay him, for their captain, seeing his strength, worn though he was with hardships, thought that Melko might perchance be pleasured if he was brought before him, and might set him to some heavy thrall work in his mines or in his smithies. So came it that Beren was dragged before Melko, and he bore a stout heart within him nonetheless, for it was a belief among his father's kindred that the power of Melko would not abide for ever, but the Valar would hearken at last to the tears of the Noldali, and would arise and bind Melko and open Valinor once more to the weary elves, and great joy should come back upon earth. Melko, however, looking upon him, was wroth, asking how a gnome, a thrall by birth of his, had dared to fare away into the woods unbidden. But Beren answered that he was no runagate, but came of a kindred of gnomes that dwelt in Ariador, and mingled much there among the folk of men. Then was Melko yet more angry, for he sought ever to destroy the friendship and intercourse of elves and men, and said that evidently here was a plotter of deep treacheries against Melko's lordship, and one worthy of the tortures of the Balrogs. But Beren, seeing his peril, answered, "Think not, O most mighty Ainu Melko, lord of the world, that this can be true, for an it were, then should I not be here unaided and alone. No friendship has Beren, son of Egnor, for the kindred of men. Nay, indeed, wearying utterly of the lands infested by that folk, he has wandered out of Ariador. Many a great tale has my father made to me aforetime of thy splendor and glory, wherefore, albeit I am no renegade thrall, I do desire nothing so much as to serve thee in what small manner I may." And Beren said therewith that he was a great trapper of small animals and a snarer of birds, and had become lost in the hills in these pursuits, until after much wandering he had come into strange lands, and even had not the orcs seized him, he would indeed have had no other rede of safety but to approach the majesty of Ainu Melko and beg him to grant him some humble office, as a winner of meats for his table, perchance. Now the Valar must have inspired that speech, or perchance it was a spell of cunning words cast on him in compassion by Gwendoling, for indeed it saved his life. And Melko, marking his hardy frame, believed him, and was willing to accept him as a thrall of his kitchens. Flattery savored ever sweet in the nostrils of that Ainu, and for all his unfathomed wisdom, any a lie of those whom he despised deceived him, for they clothed sweetly in words of praise. Therefore now he gave orders for Beren to be made a thrall of Tivildo, prince of cats. Footnote. Footnote in the manuscript, Tifil, Brithon, Mielgion, or Tevildo, Vardo, Meowita. End of footnote. Now Tevildo was a mighty cat, the mightiest of all, and possessed of an evil sprite, as some say, and he was in Melko's constant following. And that cat had all cats subject to him, and he and his subjects were the chasers and getters of meat for Melko's table and for his frequent feasts. Wherefore is it that there is hatred still between the elves and all cats, even now when Melko rules no more, and his beasts are become of little account? When therefore Beren was led away to the halls of Tevildo, and these were not utterly distant from the place of Melko's throne, he was much afraid, for he had not looked for such a turn in things, and those halls were ill-lighted, and were full of growling and of monstrous purrings in the dark. All about shone cat's eyes glowing like green lamps, or red or yellow, where Tevildo's thanes sat waving and lashing their beautiful tails. But Tevildo himself sat at their head, and he was a mighty cat, and coal-black, and evil to look upon.
His eyes were long and very narrow and slanted, and gleamed both red and green. But his great grey whiskers were as stout and as sharp as needles. His purr was like the roll of drums, and his growl like thunder. But when he yelled in wrath, it turned the blood cold. And indeed small beasts and birds were frozen as to stone, or dropped lifeless often at the very sound. Now Tevildo, seeing Beren, narrowed his eyes until they seemed to shut, and said, "I smell dog." And he took dislike to Beren from that moment. Now Beren had been a lover of hounds in his own wild home.
"Why," said Tevildo, "do ye dare to bring such a creature before me, unless perchance it is to make meat of him?"
But those who led Beren said, "Nay, it was the word of Melko that this unhappy elf wear out his life as a catcher of beasts and birds in Tevildo's employ." Then indeed did Tevildo screech in scorn and said,
"Then in sooth was my lord asleep, or his thoughts were settled elsewhere? For what use, think ye, is a child of the Eldar to aid the Prince of Cats and his thanes in the catching of birds or of beasts? As well had ye brought some clumsy-footed man, for none are there either of elves or men that can vie with us in our pursuit."
Nonetheless, he set Beren to a test, and he bade him go catch 3 mice.
"For my hall is infested with them," said he.
This indeed was not true, as might be imagined, yet a certain few there were, a very wild, evil, and magic kind that dared to dwell there in dark holes. But they were larger than rats, and very fierce, and Tevildo harbored them for his own private sport, and suffered not their numbers to dwindle. 3 days did Beren hunt them, but having nothing wherewith to devise a trap, and indeed he did not lie to Melko, saying that he had cunning in such contrivances, he hunted in vain, getting nothing better than a bitten finger for all his labor. Then was Tevildo scornful and in great anger, but Beren got no harm of him or his thanes at that time because of Melko's bidding other than a few scratches. Evil, however, were his days thereafter than the dwellings of Tevildo. They made him a scullion, and his days passed miserably in the washing of floors and vessels, in the scrubbing of tables and the hewing of wood and the drawing of water. Often, too, would he be set to the turning of spits, whereon birds and fat mice were daintily roasted for the cats, yet seldom did he get food or sleep himself. And he became haggard and unkempt, and wished often that never straying out of his Salome he had not even caught sight of the vision of Tenuvial.
Now that fair maiden wept for a very great while after Beren's departure, and danced no more about the woods. And Dairon grew angry and could not understand her. But she had grown to love the face of Beren peeping through the branches and the crackle of his feet as they followed her through the wood, and his voice that called wistfully, "Tenuvial, Tenuvial," across the stream before her father's doors she longed to hear again. And she would not now dance when Beren was fled to the evil halls of Melko, and maybe had already perished. So bitter did this thought become at last that most tender maiden went to her mother, but to her father she dared not go, nor even suffer him to see her weep. "Oh, Gwendoline, my mother," said she, "tell me of thy magic, if thou canst. How doth Beren fare? Is all yet well with him?"
"Nay," said Gwendoline, "he lives indeed, but in an evil captivity, and hope is dead in his heart. For behold, he is a slave in the power of Tevildo, Prince of Cats."
"Then," said Tenuvial, "I must go and succor him, for none else do I know that will."
Now Gwendoline laughed not, for in many matters she was wise and forewise, yet it was a thing unthought in a mad dream that any elf, still less a maiden, the daughter of the king, should fare untender to the halls of Melko, even in those earlier days before the Battle of Tears, when Melko's power had not grown great, and he veiled his designs and spread his net of lies. Wherefore did Gwendoline softly bid her not to speak such folly. But Tenuvial said,
"Then must thou plead with my father for aid, that he send warriors to Angamundi and demand the freedom of Beren from Ainu Melko."
This, indeed, did Gwendoline do, of love for her daughter. And so wroth was Tinwellant that Tenuvial wished that never had her desire been made known.
And Tinwelland bade her nor speak nor think of Beren more, and swore he would slay him an he trod those halls again. Now then Tinuviel pondered much what she might do, and going to Dairon she begged him to aid her, or indeed to fare away with her to Angamondi, and he would. But Dairon thought with little love of Beren, and he said, Wherefore should I go into the direst peril that there is in the world, for the sake of a wandering gnome of the woods? Indeed I have no love for him, for he has destroyed our play together, our music, and our dancing. But Dairon, moreover, told the king of what Tinuviel had desired of him. And this he did not of ill intent, but fearing lest Tinuviel fare away to her death in the madness of her heart. Now when Tinwelland heard this, he called Tinuviel and said, Wherefore, O maiden of mine, dost thou not put this folly away from thee and seek to do my bidding?
Note 5. Now when Tinwelland, from this point and continuing to the words Forests of the South on page 21, the text is written on detached pages placed in the notebook. There is no rejected material corresponding to this passage. It is possible that it existed and was removed from the book and lost. But though the book is in a decayed state, it does not seem that any pages were removed here, and I think it more likely that my father simply found himself short of space as he wrote over the original erased version and almost certainly expanded it as he went. End of note. But Tinuviel would not answer, and the king bade her promise him that neither would she think more on Beren, nor would she seek in her folly to follow after him to the evil lands, whether alone or tempting any of his folk with her. But Tinuviel said that the first she would not promise, and the second only in part, for she would not tempt any of the folk of the woodlands to go with her. Then was her father mightily angry, and beneath his anger not a little amazed and afraid, for he loved Tinuviel. But this was the plan he devised, for he might not shut his daughter forever in the caverns, where only a dim and flickering light ever came. Now above the portals of his cavernous hall was a steep slope falling to the river, and there grew mighty beeches. And one there was that was named Hyrolorn, the queen of trees, for she was very mighty, and so deeply cloven was her bole, that it seemed as if three shafts sprang from the ground together, and they were of like size, round and straight, and their grey rind was smooth as silk, unbroken by branch or twig, for a very great height above men's heads. Now Tinwelland let build high up in that strange tree, as high as men could fashion their longest ladders to reach, a little house of wood. And it was above the first branches, and was sweetly veiled in leaves. Now that house had three corners and three windows in each wall, and at each corner was one of the shafts of Hyrolorn. There then did Tinwelland bid Tinuviel dwell until she would consent to be wise, and when she fared up the ladders of tall pine these were taken from beneath, and no way had she to get down again. All that she required was brought to her, and folk would scale the ladders and give her food or whatever else she wished for, and then descending again, take away the ladders, and the king promised death to any who left one leaning against the tree, or who should try by stealth to place one there at night. A guard, therefore, was set nigh the tree's foot, and yet came Dairon often thither in sorrow at what he had brought to pass. For he was lonely without Tinuviel. But Tinuviel had at first much pleasure in her house among the leaves, and would gaze out of her little window while Dairon made his sweetest melodies beneath. But one night a dream of the Valar came to Tinuviel, as she dreamt of Beren, and her heart said, Let me be gone to seek him whom all others have forgot. And waking, the moon was shining through the trees, and she pondered very deeply how she might escape. Now Tinuviel, daughter of Gwendolyn, was not ignorant of magics or of spells, as may well be believed, and after much thought, she devised a plan. The next day she asked those who came to her to bring, if they would, some of the clearest water of the stream below. But this, she said, must be drawn at midnight in a silver bowl and brought to my hand with no word spoken. And after that she desired wine to be brought. But this, she said, must be borne hither in a flagon of gold at noon, and he who brings it must sing as he comes. And they did as they were bid, but Tinwelland was not told.
Then said Tinuviel, Go now to my mother and say to her that her daughter desires a spinning wheel to pass her weary hours. But Dairon, secretly she begged, fashion her a tiny loom. And he did this even in the little house of Tinuviel in the tree. But wherewith will you spin, and wherewith weave? Said he. And Tinuviel answered, With spells and magics. For Dairon knew not her design, nor said more to the king or to Gwendolyn. Now Tinuviel took the wine and water when she was alone, and singing a very magical song the while, she mingled them together. And as they lay in the bowl of gold, she sang a song of growth. And as they lay in the bowl of silver, she sang another song, and the names of all the tallest and longest things upon earth were set in that song. The beards of the Indravangs, the tail of Karkaros, the body of Glorund, the bowl of Hyrelorn, and the sword of Narn she named, nor did she forget the chain Angainu that Aule and Tulkas made, or the neck of Gilim the giant. And last and longest of all, she spake of the hair of Uinen, the lady of the sea that is spread through all the waters. Then did she lave her head with the mingled water and wine. And as she did so, she sang a third song, a song of uttermost sleep. And the hair of Tinuviel, which was dark and finer than the most delicate threads of twilight, began suddenly to grow very fast indeed. And after 12 hours had passed, it nigh filled the little room. And then Tinuviel was very pleased, and she lay down to rest. And when she awoke, the room was full as with a black mist, and she was deep hidden under it. And lo, her hair was trailing out of the windows and blowing about the tree boles in the morning. Then with difficulty she found her little shears, and cut the threads of that growth nigh to her head, and after that her hair grew only as it was wont before. Then was the labor of Tinuviel begun, and though she labored with the deftness of an elf, long was she spinning and longer weaving still. And did any come and hail her from below, she bid them be gone, saying, I am abed and desire only to sleep. And Dairon was much amazed, and called often up to her, but she did not answer. Now of that cloudy hair Tinuviel wove a robe of misty black, soaked with drowsiness more magical far than even that one that her mother had worn and danced in long, long ago before the sun arose. And therewith she covered her garments of shimmering white, and magic slumbers filled the airs about her. But of what remained she twisted a mighty strand, and this she fastened to the bole of the tree within her house. And then was her labor ended, and she looked out of her window westward to the river. Already the sunlight was fading in the trees, and as dusk filled the woods, she began a song very soft and low. And as she sung, she cast out her long hair from the window, so that its slumberous mist touched the heads and faces of the guards below. And they, listening to her voice, fell suddenly into a fathomless sleep. Then did Tinuviel, clad in her garments of darkness, slip down that rope of hair light as a squirrel, and away she danced to the bridge. And before the bridge wards could cry out, she was among them, dancing, and as the hem of her black robe touched them, they fell asleep, and Tinuviel fled very far away, as fast as her dancing feet would flit. Now when the escape of Tinuviel reached the ears of Tinwelant, great was his mingled grief and wrath, and all his court was in uproar, and all the woods ringing with the search. But Tinuviel was already far away, drawing nigh to the gloomy foothills where the mountains of night begin. And 'tis said that Dairon, following after her, became utterly lost, and came never back to Elfenessa, but turned towards Palisor, and there plays subtle magic music still, wistful and lonely in the woods and forests of the south. Note 6. The text as originally written read, Came never back to Elu, but plays, For Elu see changes to names below. As a result of the interpolation, but turned towards Palisor, Palisor is placed in the south of the world. In the tale of the coming of the elves, 1.1.14, Palisor is called the midmost region. See also the drawing of the world ship, 1.84. And it seems possible that the word south should have been changed, but it remains in the typescript, page 47. End of note. Yet ere long, as Tinuviel went forward, a sudden dread overtook her at the thought of what she had dared to do and what lay before. Then did she turn back for a while, and she wept, wishing Dairon was with her. And it is said that he indeed was not far off, but was wandering lost in the great pines, the forest of night, where afterward Turin slew Beleg by mishap. Note 7. The tale of Turambar, though composed after the tale of Tinuviel, was in existence when Tinuviel was rewritten, see page 69, end of note. Nigh was Tinuviel now to those places, but she entered not that dark region, and regaining heart pressed on, and by reason of the greater magic of her being, and because of the spell of wonder and of sleep that fared about her, no such dangers assailed her as did Beren before. Yet was it a long and evil and weary journey for a maiden to tread. Now is it to be told to thee, Ariel, that in those days Tevildo had but one trouble in the world, and that was the kindred of the dogs. Many indeed of these were neither friends nor foes of the cats, for they had become subject to Melko, and were as savage and cruel as any of his animals. Indeed, from the most cruel and most savage he bred the race of wolves, and they were very dear indeed to him. Was it not the great grey wolf Carcharus Knife-Fang, father of wolves, who guarded the gates of Angamandi in those days, and long had done so? Many were there, however, who would neither bow to Melko nor live wholly in fear of him, but dwelt either in the dwellings of men and guarded them from much evil that had otherwise befallen them, or roamed the woods of Hiselome, or passing the mountainous places fared even at times into the region of Artanor and the land beyond and to the south. Did ever any of these view Tevildo, or any of his thanes or subjects, then there was a great baying and a mighty chase, and albeit seldom was any cat slain by reason of their skill in climbing and in hiding, and because of the protecting might of Melko, yet was great enmity between them, and some of those hounds were held in dread among the cats. None, however, did Tevildo fear, for he was as strong as any among them, and more agile and more swift, save only than Juan, captain of dogs. So swift was Juan that on a time he had tasted the fur of Tevildo. And though Tevildo had paid him for that with a gash from his great claws, yet was the pride of the Prince of Cats unappeased, and he lusted to do a great harm to Juan of the dogs. Great, therefore, was the good fortune that befell Tinuviel in meeting with Juan in the woods, although at first she was mortally afraid and fled. But Juan overtook her in two leaps, and speaking soft and deep the tongue of the lost elves, he bid her be not afraid. And, "Wherefore," said he, "do I see an elfin maiden, and one most fair, wandering alone so nigh to the abodes of the Ainu of evil? Know'st thou not these are very evil places to be in, little one, even with a companion, and they are death to the lonely?" "That know I," said she, "and I am not here for the love of wayfaring, but I seek only Beren." "What knowest thou then," said Juan, "of Beren, or indeed meanest thou Beren, son of the huntsman of the elves, Egnor Borimion, a friend of mine since very ancient days?" "Nay, I know not even whether my Beren be thy friend, but I seek only Beren from beyond the bitter hills, whom I knew in the woods near to my father's home. Now is he gone, and my mother Gwendoline says of her wisdom that he is a thrall in the cruel house of Tevildo, Prince of Cats. And whether this be true, or yet worse be now befallen him, I do not know, and I go to discover him, though plan I have none."
"Then will I make thee one," said Juan. "But do thou trust in me, for I am Juan of the dogs, chief foe of Tevildo. Rest thee now with me a while within the shadows of the wood, and I will think deeply."
Then Tinuviel did as he said, and indeed she slept long while Juan watched, for she was very weary. But after a while, awakening, she said, "Lo, I have tarried over long. Come, what is thy thought, O Juan?" And Juan said, "A dark and difficult matter is this, and no other reed can I devise but this. Creep now, if thou hast the heart, to the abiding place of that prince while the sun is high, and Tevildo and the most of his household drowse upon the terraces before his gates. There discover in what manner thou mayst whether Beren be indeed within, as thy mother said to thee. Now I will lie not far hence in the woods, and thou wilt do me a pleasure and aid thy own desires in going before Tevildo, be Beren there or be he not.
Thou tellest him how thou hast stumbled upon Juan of the Dogs, lying sick in the woods at this place. Do not indeed direct him hither, for thou must guide him, if it may be, thyself. Then wilt thou see what I contrive for thee and for Tevildo. He thinks that bearing such tidings, Tevildo will not entreat thee ill within his halls, nor seek to hold thee there. In this way did Juan design both to do Tevildo a hurt, or perchance, if it might so be, to slay him, and to aid Baron, whom he guessed in truth to be that Baron, son of Egnor, whom the hounds of Hisalome loved. Indeed, hearing the name of Gwendoling, and knowing thereby that this maiden was a princess of the woodland fairies, he was eager to aid her, and his heart warmed to her sweetness. Now Tinuviel, taking heart, stole near to the halls of Tevildo, and Juan wondered much at her courage, following unknown to her as far as he might for the success of his design. At length, however, she passed beyond his sight, and leaving the shelter of the trees, came to a region of long grass dotted with bushes that sloped ever upward toward a shoulder of the hills. Now upon that rocky spur the sun shone, but over all the hills and mountains at its back a black cloud brooded, for there was Angamandi. And Tinuviel fared on, not daring to look up at that gloom, for fear oppressed her. And as she went, the ground rose, and the grass grew more scant and rock-strewn, until it came even to a cliff, sheer of one side, and there upon a stony shelf was the castle of Tevildo. No pathway led thereto, and the place where it stood fell towards the woods in terrace after terrace, so that none might reach its gates save by many great leaps, and those became ever steeper as the castle drew more nigh. Few were the windows of the house, and upon the ground there were none. Indeed, the very gate was in the air, wherein the dwellings of men are wont to be the windows of the upper floor, but the roof had many wide and flat spaces open to the sun. Now does Tinuviel wander disconsolate upon the lowest terrace, and look in dread at the dark house upon the hill, when, behold, she came at a bend in the rock upon a lone cat lying in the sun and seemingly asleep. As she approached, he opened a yellow eye and blinked at her, and thereupon, rising and stretching, he stepped up to her and said, "Whither away, little maid? Dost not know that you trespass on the sunning ground of His Highness Tevildo and his thanes?" Now Tinuviel was very much afraid, but she made as bold an answer as she was able, saying, "That know I, my lord." And this pleased the old cat greatly, for he was in truth only Tevildo's doorkeeper. "But I would indeed of your goodness be brought to Tevildo's presence now, nay, even if he sleeps," said she, for the doorkeeper lashed his tail in astonished refusal. "I have words of immediate import for his private ear. Lead me to him, my lord," she pleaded, and thereat the cat purred so loudly that she dared to stroke his ugly head, and this was much larger than her own, being greater than that of any dog that is now on earth. Thus entreated, the Muayan, for such was his name, said, "Come then with me," and seizing Tinuviel suddenly by her garments at the shoulder, to her great terror, he tossed her upon his back and leaped upon the second terrace. There he stopped. And as Tinuviel scrambled from his back, he said, "Well is it for thee that this afternoon my lord Tevildo lieth upon this lowly terrace far from his house, for a great weariness and a desire for sleep has come upon me, so that I fear me I should not be willing to carry thee much farther." Now Tinuviel was robed in her robe of sable mist. So saying, Umuyan yawned mightily and stretched himself before he led her along that terrace to an open space, where upon a wide couch of baking stones lay the horrible form of Tevildo himself, and both his evil eyes were shut. Footnote. Written above Umuyan, here is the name Gumniau, enclosed within brackets. End of footnote. Going up to him, the door-cat Umuyan spoke in his ear softly, saying, "A maiden awaits thy pleasure, my lord, who hath news of importance to deliver to thee, nor would she take my refusal."